when they know who we are.
Things are changing. See it all unfurl.
Gay and straight together in acceptance in this world. The world will change when they know who we are. The world will change when they know who we are.
We are.
The world will change when they know who we are. When they know who we are.
Change from anger to understanding.
When they know who we are.
Change from anger to understanding.
When they know who we are. Things are changing.
This is the Lesbian Power Authority on KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and 106.7 FM in St. Paul. And my name is Mev. And now, happy patriarchal tidy time new year to you all, since I wasn't here last week to wish you all that. And this evening we have in the studio with us Joanna Cotty, who is going to be speaking with us this evening about cultural appropriation and the lesbian community. Welcome, Joanna. How are you?
Thanks. Doing fine.
Good.
Good to be here.
I wanted to, I invited Joanna a long time ago to have this conversation with us because it came out of something that happened in the community several months ago and a workshop that followed after that. So, and I thought it was, I couldn't get to the workshop and I really wanted to go. So I thought that there might be true for others as well. So that's why I invited Joanna this evening to talk with us about it. So can you tell us a little bit about that event and what precipitated the conversation?
Sure, yeah. Some of the people listening might have heard about the controversy at Old Arizona Studios, where the Vulva Riot Cabaret had been coming out of there. And there was an incident, I guess, in the spring now. Maybe it was the summer, I can't remember, where the two owners of Old Arizona were basically taken to task by a group of women, women of color and white women, who said that there was an act of cultural appropriation going on in the studio in regards to the setting up of a Buddhist altar. And the response from the owners of Old Arizona was not terribly helpful. And Vulvarite has moved from that location because of that. And one of the things that happened after the event was that Eleanor Savage, who runs the Vulva Riot Cabaret with help from other people, but she's basically the person who does it, wanted there to be a discussion in queer women's community about what had happened and what we could learn from it. So myself and Jennifer Robles initiated a conversation, sort of workshop, whatever you want to call it, on a Sunday afternoon a few months ago to try to talk about issues of cultural appropriation in queer women's spaces. What was going on, how to identify it, what to do when it happened, and what could we learn from what happened at Old Arizona Studios. For me, there's not a lot of point in trashing them. Unfortunately, cultural appropriation happens so many times in so many different ways that there wasn't that much unusual about what happened there. But the positive thing was a discussion started happening. 30 women came out on a Sunday afternoon, and had a very good discussion about the issues. So that's sort of a bit of the background. And so, as I said, some of the listeners are probably aware of what happened.
Can you, what is exactly cultural appropriation? I know that it's a term that gets used frequently in different contexts. And how do you describe it?
Well, I think it's important to try to define it. And I think it's also important to say that it's an incredibly complicated thing. And that what I'm going to say is necessarily brief and toned down and just trying to get some of the main points across as I see it. It's not like there's one definition that you would find. People have different ideas. For me, it has to do with the fact that when you appropriate something, you take possession of it. So if you are doing something that is cultural appropriation, for me, it has to do with taking possession of someone else's culture in a way that is oppressive and unethical. And that's sort of, you know, the simplest way for me to say that. And of course, that doesn't really get behind all the complexity about it. I know that for me, it's sometimes easier to give examples. Like one of the things that I've noticed around cultural appropriation, a lot of it has to do with drumming, and particularly in queer women's communities where drumming is a very popular thing right now and has been, you know, for 10 or 15 years. And I'm a drummer. I play the Arabic drum, which is a derbeki. And one of the ways that I've seen cultural appropriation happening around drumming and around the derbeki in particular is that I see white women playing the derbeki in a way that is completely outside of the traditional way that Arabs play the drum. I'm talking about women who don't know the name of the drum, who don't play it in any style that is at all connected to Arabic culture, who don't know any of the traditional Arabic rhythms and don't know anything about the culture it came from. So that's a pretty clear-cut example of the kind of oppressive, unethical approach to taking possession of someone else's culture. Now, when I see somebody who is not an Arab, but knows enough about the derbeki, is playing it appropriately, knows Arabic rhythms, and knows something about Arab culture and history, I don't find a problem with that. And I think that's what people often get hung up about. They think I'm saying nobody who's not Arab should play that drum. That's not what I'm saying.
And it seems to me that some of what happens with cultural appropriation is connected to issues of racism or issues of homophobia, because we were discussing, it seems that cultural appropriation is seen within a racist context for the most part. But I, in thinking about it myself, I also think, you know, I as a lesbian do not want any man playing at what I consider to be aspects of lesbian cultures, as multiplicity as that can be defined. So could we talk a little bit about the connections between racism and cultural appropriation? And one story that particularly comes to mind for me is several years ago, the Third International Feminist Book Fair was in Montreal, and one of the things that happened there was that a group of Native American women got together and requested that Anne Cameron stop writing Native American mythology, and she basically did, based on her conversation with them. As you know, then that's all hearsay and story, but it is true that since then I have not seen Anne Cameron write anything about Native American mythology. So
yeah, I think that there's a whole range of things about it. I do tend to keep focused when I'm talking about cultural appropriation. I'm usually looking at issues of race and imperialism and the kind of cultural genocide that's going on today. I think there's a lot of aspects. I think there's a lot of ways that what I would consider oppressive things happen in terms of middle and upper class people sort of taking aspects of working class culture without thinking about it and without even knowing what they're doing. I think there's ways that straight people may mimic or steal from queer culture and not be aware of what they're doing. And I think those are really important issues for me to look at, for all of us to look at. I've mostly, when I've thought about this issue, the race stuff has been so glaring and so problematic, particularly in recent years, it seems like it's getting worse. And I think that's a direct tie-in to all of the hype about multiculturalism. And of course, when authentic multiculturalism happens, it's something that I'm very pleased to see and very supportive of. There is another kind of multiculturalism that just has to do with ripping off people's culture. And I think that's why there's been such a marked increase in the discussion from communities of color about what's going on. I mean, when I can walk into a big discount store like Target and see Native art for sale, African textiles for sale, there's a problem. There's a big problem. So yeah, it's getting more discussion from communities of color, and I'd like to see that discussion really carry over into progressive communities. I'd like, for example, to see white lesbian feminists take up the issue in a more vigorous way than I think has happened to date.
Yeah, and I think it's really hard too, especially for, let's say, white lesbians who may be thinking about, or actually trying to mm-hmm. unlearn their racism. How do we define or describe the differences between what is cultural appropriation and cultural appreciation, mm-hmm. you know, how do I, as a white feminist lesbian, know the difference, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure that comes a lot with conversation and example. And I think that what you said earlier about understanding systems of oppression and understanding colonialism and some of those things, which I don't think gets talked about too much in lesbian community.
I don't think there's enough of that historical context about the history of imperialism and not just the history of it, the present day experience of it, because it is certainly, I mean, for all the weird talk that we hear about post-colonial societies, I don't know who invented that term, but I don't think it was a person of color. I don't think we're post-colonial. But yeah, I think that in terms of people wanting to work on this issue and people wanting to share and appreciate different cultures in a healthy, liberatory way, I think the only thing we can do is sort of start talking to each other. I can't prescribe something for anybody. I can say that people who are engaged in discussion about this issue with a variety of people, not just with a circle of friends who may well share the same racial and class background, but people who are engaged in that kind of cross-cultural discussion, people who are reading about the issue, people who are asking questions, and people who don't get freaked out when somebody asks them a question. I mean, my friend Juliana Pagese made this point at the workshop that we did about the old Arizona incident, and said that for her, one of the really good standpoints was if she asked somebody what they were doing, if she was trying to figure out, is this cultural appropriation or are they okay, that their response to her question told her a lot. And so that openness to being challenged, to discussing things, and to hearing critical things about what we could be doing is a kind of signpost for somebody who's like trying to do the right thing.
I think, too, I mean, just in my own thinking about it, my own experience mostly comes from lesbians who I know who are doing this in terms of spirituality, which I think is really the biggest ripoff, is when you go after somebody's spirituality. And most often the cases that I see are when white women in particular go for Native American spirituality. And I've seen that all over the country, not just here in the Twin Cities area. And it's very problematic. You know, and I think that part of it for me is to understand that the women who I know who have done that are lacking an understanding and appreciation. They're experiencing the poverty of their own cultural, whatever, lack of spiritual expression. You know, that there's a way that they're not connected to their own cultural roots, whatever they
right.
are.
Right. I think that we find that it's not just white people who have a real lack of understanding of systems of oppression and power and authority and the way they get played out, but white people who are pretty out of touch with where they come from. Because obviously, if white people trace back their roots, such as Scottish, German, whatever, I mean, there is usually, I mean, obviously I can't say for every white culture, but there are definitely indigenous pagan or centered religions that happened across Europe. It's ridiculous for white women to say, I don't have anything to go back to, I envy you. That's a load of crap. I mean, it's there. So this piece about, you know, for white women working against racism, understanding imperialism, and realizing that, in fact, the chance of them not having anything to look to is a, you know, some kind of bizarre, I'm not sure, you know, where that all comes from, but it's not true. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, well, this is kind of changing the conversation a little bit, so maybe I won't go down that road. Well, why don't we just leave it at that for a minute? I have Tracy Chapman queued up, and this is from her new CD called New Beginnings, and it's called Tell It Like It Is. Thank you. Okay, and that was Tracy Chapman with Tell It Like It Is from her new CD, New Beginnings. And we're in the studio this evening with Joanna Cotting, and we've been talking about cultural appropriation. And earlier, Joanna, you mentioned that this was a group discussion, and I'm curious to know what solutions or tactics or whatever came out of that discussion.
Well, I think the best thing about the discussion was that it happened, that people came. I don't think there's been very much sort of large community discussions among queer women about this stuff. I think there has been among dykes of color, but I don't think it's influenced the larger communities and gotten in there. So for me, it was exciting that this was planned. People came. There was a discussion. The other thing that happened was that the Asian Pacific Lesbian and Bisexual Women put together a really good package of information on cultural appropriation, sort of a, you know, what is it, what does it look like, who's saying what, with a few articles in it. So it feels to me that while it's a huge issue to tackle, there's been some openness in this community to raising the issue and starting to look at it. And I would really love to see other women sort of pick up the ball. There's nothing formal happening. There's nothing ongoing. But it does feel like there's been a bit of a push, that there is a place in this community for people to raise the issue and start doing some things. So I would really encourage, you know, that kind of thing to happen. And to know that there would be people very interested in continuing the discussion and looking at issues in their own lives and continuing that kind of ongoing education around the issues.
You have an event that's coming up.
Right. People might be interested. There is a Asian Trinidadian Canadian gay man coming from Toronto. He'll have a residency here in the month of April. His name is Richard Fung, and he wrote a very good article on cultural appropriation for one of the big arts magazines in Canada. And I have written a fairly lengthy article on cultural appropriation that was published in Colors magazine here. So I don't know what the date is, but I will give you that information when I have it so that you can announce it, because Richard and I will be having an evening where we haven't quite planned it yet, but we know part of it will be probably reading from the stuff we've written about cultural appropriation, having some kind of dialogue, some kind of audience discussion, you know, around these issues and how to deal with them. The work he's doing is very exciting, and I think that it will be a good opportunity for people in the Twin Cities who, you know, want to push themselves on this issue and get involved in it, and hopefully what will be a good discussion. So that'll be happening sometime in April.
And we have a nice segue. If you're interested in Joanna's article, it is an older issue of Colors,
yes.
So I don't know if you can still get it or not. But
yes,
if you're interested in reading it, Joanna has a book coming soon.
Yes. I'm going to have a collection of my essays that will be published by South End Press October 96, so not that far away. I'm just sort of in the process of finishing up all the revisions to the articles, and one of the pieces will be this article on cultural appropriation from Colors that's, you know, expanded and revised, a little more up to date than it was, because it's been a couple years since I wrote it now, but unfortunately still as pertinent as ever. So it's an exciting project for me, and it will be available this fall.
Do you have a title for it yet?
Well, I'm kind of playing around with ideas, because the common theme to all the essays that's connecting the essays is class, and my identity as a working class person looking at issues of race, class, culture, and imperialism sort of by themselves and how they kind of work together in insidious ways. So I'm kind of playing with ideas of, you know, working class writing, working class resistance, but I haven't come up with the final title yet. So we just started working on the cover and the title. Hopefully that'll fall into place soon.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on this bitter cold evening.
Yeah,
tackling
it was a bit
what
hard getting in the old car, which had frost all over the windshield, which I was trying to scrape off as I was driving, but I was very glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Being the movement person that you are here, keeping us all warm on a Sunday evening. So thanks a lot, Joanna.
Thanks.
And, this is Faith Nolan coming up now with I, Black Woman.
Time. where song should be. And where song should be, I hear free.
Hey,
Okay, and that was Jan Ronalls and Bron Bradshaw from a tape called Tree Magic. And the music on that set was totally improvised. And it says here, it was born on the common vision shared by Jana and Bron of the power, beauty, and importance of trees in our world. It started in a Celtic tree circle near Glastonbury and was inspired by the closeness of Mother Earth and the magic of trees. Before that, we heard a group called Tidas, and they are from Australia, and the song we heard was Inane, which is a traditional Aboriginal song that they recorded. And before that, we heard from Jagadamba with a song called Respect, and we started off the set with Faith Nolan, I, Black Woman. And the next thing I have queued up is from Irene Ferreira from a CD called Alma Latina, which is fairly new. And the song we're going to play is Porvos. And for those of you who do not understand Spanish, here are the words. This eagerness to sing to the beds of the chattering river, it's an eagerness to stay on the bridges, to watch it go by and let my voice go to the sea and travel and travel and wander beyond, beyond the beyond, and then rise up to the sky with my voice, and scream to the winds, cry in the clouds, and rain my voice with the rain, and return to the bridges voiceless, to take the laughter from the chattering river again, babble my voice on the bridges again, and let you fall again, poor voice, again. And this is Irene Ferreira.
Es afán de cantarle a los cauces del río hablador, solo afán de quedarme en los puentes a verle pasar y dejar que se vaya mi voz hasta el mar y viajar, y viajar, y vagar, y vagar hasta allá. Más allá del allá. Y después ascender hasta el cielo en mi voz y gritando a los vientos llorar en las nubes y llover con la lluvia mi voz. Y al volver a los puentes sin voz, retomarle la risa del río hablador otra vez. Balbucearte de nuevo en los puentes mi voz y dejarte caer otra vez, pobre voz, otra vez. Después ascender hasta el cielo en mi voz y gritando a los vientos llorar en las nubes y llover con la lluvia mi voz y al volver a los puentes sin voz retomarle la risa del río hablador otra vez. Balbucearte de nuevo en los puentes mi voz y dejar de caer otra vez, pobre vos, otra vez.
A valley sits behind. A beaten path is far from here, and the walls are grown so high. I hear a voice calling that I recognize. I hear your footstep from behind. I don't know what to say. Bye.